It's really good to see you all. It's good to be back. Well, I really appreciated the warm greeting from Mary. It's like she welcomed me in as if I was an old friend, and even though I only come through once a year and teach now because I no longer live in Marin, it does feel a bit that way. So it's just like, oh, I've missed you all. Good to see you. Yeah. So I can't even begin to imagine what each of you has been through in your internal journey and the journey of your life in the last year since since we sat in a room together, because the last time I was with you, we were sitting in a room together. And I'm so grateful that there are options, that we can come together like this and have the safety of this and the ease of this. I was telling some of the folks who arrived early, I actually just finished teaching a retreat online 7 minutes before our community gathering started. And you can only do that on Zoom. And somebody said, "Oh, you must be exhausted." And I said, "No, actually, I'm filled with energy and enthusiasm, being carried by the wave of this retreat of women that I just finished gathering with for a few days." So here we are. So I thought, as far as a reflection tonight, reflect a little bit and actually do a little bit of practice on what I'm calling these days the two R's. And for me, the two R's are the experience of reactivity and release. The two R's. And of course, we could have a whole retreat on this topic, and we do. But this will just be a short reflection and some invitations into practice that I both hope are reminders for you and also might be kind of fresh. Actually, I should ask before I begin with the opening quote, is there anybody here who considers themselves brand new to meditation? Because, I would speak a little bit differently if that were true. Okay. No hands have raised of those who are on screen. So we'll go with that. And that was kind of my guess, but it's always good to double check. So I thought I'd start with a couple of opening quotes on the topic of release, and then we can dive into reactivity and play around a little bit. So the opening poem is called Release. And it's by Julia Frenbacher. I believe she's white. I need to double check that. This is one of these poems that was handed to me by somebody. So sometimes that's a way that I receive wonderful poems. This morning, as my eyes blink open, it occurs to me as if for the first time, what you, miracle body, have been up to. All night long, while I let go, you pumped blood through veins to fingertips and toes, grew cells and eyelashes and nails, inhaled and exhaled countless times. All this while the sun tirelessly birthed new life. All this without a thought or a word or a worry, without a drop of help from me. I laugh when I remember that just yesterday, in a torrent of heart-numbing stories, I seriously thought I needed to do something. Well, that's it. The reactivity and the release is already happening. It's like, we just need to rest back into it. It's a wonderful poem. Another theme that's been really on my heart in recent times in regard to the teaching of release is our interdependence, which we already knew in direct experience in countless different personal and structural ways. And yet this last year of life together has shown us a level of nuance that is indescribable. It's like, we already knew that we breathed the same air, but the awareness has been heightened. We already knew that what affects one heart affects another heart, and yet the awareness has been heightened. So this is a quote by the African-American scientist, botanist, also inventor, George Washington Carver. How far you go in life depends on you being tender with the young, compassionate with the aged, sympathetic with the striving, and tolerant of both the weak and the strong. Because someday in life, you will have been all of these. And I love that quote because it really illuminates the multitudes of qualities and expressions of release. The compassion, the sympathy, the tolerance, the understanding of shared experience. The relationship between including and releasing. So then we've got the reactivity side. And I wanted to just bring in that very well-known teaching from the Buddha that sums it up, the third discourse of the Buddha in his teaching, the fire sermon, right? The world is burning. And again, for those of us that have been practicing for a long time, these old suttas and the stories that we've heard over and over, the way that I really appreciate practicing with them is because I already know it by heart. I stay on the lookout for, like, where does it wake me up this time? Where is the clarity moment that might have been different than last time? Where do I recognize my own experience in the hearing it this time? And that keeps it fresh so that it can be a lived practice, our study of the teachings. So instead of reading the formal sutta, I'm just going to ad-lib that teaching of the Buddha and then bring in a couple of accompanying quotes. So we know from the fire sermon, the world is burning. The world is burning with greed, with hatred, with delusion. The world is burning with craving, with anger and fear, with confusion. And it's burning up. And we also know from another sutta of the Buddha called the All that this world that is burning, the All, represents the six sense doors. So then we are looking through these sense doors, and when reactivity is present, it's like, the eye is burning. You know, the eye is burning with craving, with desire, with aversion, with delusion. And that which is being seen is fueling that. The ear is also burning, and that which is being heard is fueling that. It's supporting the fuel to stay lit. And then, of course, we've got the nose and the tongue and the body and the mind, and the whole world of the sense doors. So this is an accompanying quote from the numerical discourses of the Buddha. And again, slightly different translations. So use the translation that works for you for the levels of reactivity that you experience. So, enraptured by lust, enraged with anger, blinded by delusion, overwhelmed with the mind ensnared, people aim at their own ruin, at the ruin of others, at the ruin of both, and they experience mental pain and grief. But if lust, anger, and delusion are given up, one aims neither at one's own ruin or the ruin of others, nor at the ruin of both, and they experience no mental pain and grief. Thus is Nibbana visible in this life, immediate, inviting, attractive, and comprehensible to the wise. So I often think of this like wearing colored glasses, the colored glasses analogy. So it's, you know, it's always helpful when we're using analogies, if you can, you know, think of a circumstance in the last day or the last week where reactivity was present so that it's not just theoretical. And then you can, you know, practice with it a little bit. So let me call one to mind. Ah, yes, that moment of frustration. Got it. Okay. And so in calling that to mind, it's like literally when something happens and we get frustrated, when something happens and it's like, I would be more okay if I had more of that longer. When we're caught in the eddies of confusion where the clarity just isn't present, it's as if the glasses, the lenses of experience, the lenses of perception get colored with these qualities. And it's amazing. You know? So to use frustration as an example, because it's the example that I thought of in the last week, you know, if there's not awareness that the glasses get colored with frustration and we're looking around, everything is more likely to be a trigger for more frustration. I'll still never forget one of the early times that I got this in a way that was penetrating in daily life, which is really different than the times that I've gotten it in retreat. But I remember it was winter. This was well over, you know, decade, 15 years ago. And I was pulling a coat out of the closet because it was cold. And you know how the coats get caught in the other hangers because you have too many clothes in there because of the greed. Okay. So there was a greed influence on this moment of colored glasses of frustration. And so anyway, it got completely caught. I tried to get it out, off the way you do. And it's like still caught and it's more caught. And now the whole thing is skewed. And this frustration just roared through my system. Why won't this coat hanger cooperate? And then I just start laughing because it's like, it's an inanimate object. The issue is the second arrow that I'm shooting, not the coat hanger, you know? So I'm mixing my metaphors here. But I'm aware of how many of you are familiar with these foundational teachings of the Buddha, you know? So the two arrows teaching is, that when we add extra stress and suffering and reactivity to direct experience, it's like being shot by a second arrow. Now, so definitely there was a second arrow there with that coat hanger. The glasses got completely filled. They got filled so fast and so intensely that I saw it. But if I hadn't seen it, I probably would have turned around and went, why is it so cold in here? You know, the thermostat, why are the heating bills so high? Why won't this door open? And it just goes on, and the physical world and the internal world cooperates with that colored glasses view. So the importance of this cooling out of the fires of reactivity, every single one of us know, is not to be overlooked. So then we have Nibbana. Right? Or Nibbana-in. I love it as a verb. So this is a quote from Tanisaro Bhikkhu. Nibbana, which literally means the extinguishing of a fire, derives from the way that physics of fire was viewed at the Buddhist time. As fire burned, it was seen as clinging to its fuel in a state of entrapment and agitation. And when it went out, it let go of its fuel, growing calm, free. Thus, when the Indians of his time saw a fire going out, they did not feel that they were watching extinction. Rather, they were seeing a metaphorical lesson in how freedom could be attained by letting go. So the cultural context of these teachings matters. And then we're interpreting these teachers through our own cultural context, which also matters. This cooling down, cooling out, the moments when the fuel disappears of that second arrow, and then the coat hanger is the coat hanger, and the coat is the coat, and this body-mind process is this body-mind process, all interrelating. But what's missing is the heat of the fire of reactivity, which then allows an opening into more connection, more presence, more aliveness, peace. So when I think about the teachings of Ajahn Buddhadasa, the late Thai forest master of the Southern School, and the way that he talked about Nibbana or awakening for everyone. And, you know, he was also an activist during his time, and kind of an interfaith worker, and doing activist work in Southern Thailand for peace. And I really think of Nibbana for everyone as part of our internal activism. You know, that literally every time we can recognize that the glasses are filled and clear. And the question is, how do we clear? What are the tools that help us clear? Then there's more possibility for extending that same peace and clearing in the world. So when I talk about clearing the colored glasses, and once the glasses are clear, and we can clear them through mindfulness and recognition, we can clear them through body practices, including supporting the nervous system, which I'm going to bring in some practices for later. We can clear them through calling in some of the heart practices, qualities of the heart. You know, all of our Dharma teachings and practices can clear those glasses. And when they're clear, then I think of them as wisdom glasses. And of course, what they can see clearly at that point are the three characteristics. So I think of them as three wisdom lenses, that then we can see clearly that everything is changing, that when we hold on, it hurts, and that it's not personal. So then there's that clear seeing through the same lenses that were just recently clouded. And we all know that in the cycles of a day and in our life and the practice, it's really just like wearing glasses. Sometimes they get steamy. Other times there's gook on them. Sometimes they're cleared out. That's why it's a wonderful metaphor. And how are we relating to those glasses, no matter what cycle we're in? So a short inquiry here, just to make sure that we're keeping it real and not too theoretical. So checking in for a moment. Are there areas in your life and your relationships, something with the body, that in recent times there's been a lot of burning up with reactivity? And, you know, if you have a lot of them, you don't need to think of all of them. Just call up one. Oh, I noticed I already put a hand on the heart, because when we're actually calling up and naming and acknowledging reactivity, if we're connecting with it, if we're not just skimming over the surface, it's painful. So sometimes it's actually putting a hand on the heart. Sometimes it's bringing real care to the recognition. Yeah, that's painful, the way that that issue, that experience burns with extra reactivity. It could be otherwise. It has not been otherwise. So bringing that care and some breath to it. And maybe inquiring a little bit more deeply. How are you being affected by that burning? What's the effect of that chronic pattern of reactivity on the body, the heart, mind, or some aspect of your life? Again, naming it with care. It's like, oh yeah, the impact is like this. and then just checking in. Now, what is your toolkit to help you continue to see this reactivity and support it to cool out? And often it's very simple things that are easily repeated. Naming to ourselves that we have resources and tools and what they are is really important for ongoing resiliency. So just a real simple inquiry like that. So speaking of ongoing resiliency, I want to bring in some practices that I've actually kind of infused with Dharma teachings that are in the field of mindfulness of the nervous system, and particularly in the face of collective reactivity, which we are all being affected by these days. Like, no matter how insulated, no matter how privileged we are or are not in different areas of our lives, these things are affecting us. You know, so whether it's the collective reactivity coming out of the pandemic, the collective reactivity coming out of the continued racial injustice, the continued political unrest, and, you know, definitely to mention the impact of all of us here in Northern California of global warming and the fires. These are all collective reactivity fields. It's like, that's four major fields we're working with. You know? If we're paying attention, the response to that is kind of, it's like, wow, that's a lot. And when we're protecting ourselves in the numbness cycle, then it's like, oh yeah, I know about that. And sometimes we need to be in the protection numbness cycle. And sometimes we really, really feel the impact of hearing the truth named. And those move in cycles too, you know, and they're all okay. You know, and so when we look at collective reactivity, you know, these are experiences that affect the psychological health of groups of people, not just individuals. And so again, we move into the interdependence. This is we. So it's interesting because it's easy to do kind of subtle spiritual bypassing. I've definitely been, you know, hearing it in some of the conversations with people I work with. I've been really keeping a careful attention on it in myself. And, you know, it can look something like, well, there's so many more people worse off than me. So then, like, somehow my full experience and impact doesn't have room to be felt, to be named, to exist. It's like a slight bypass. You know? And it's easy enough. We're all being rocked, right? So it's helpful. It's helpful to keep naming it and to honor when we can feel it and how much, and to honor when we can't and how much, and then to bring in some wisdom perspectives and very practical techniques to work with this ongoing. So first, three helpful wisdom perspectives in the face of collective reactivity and its impact on us as individuals. Number one, self-kindness versus self-judgment. So I know many of you have worked for many years on transforming the judgmental mind. And those of us that have, and I am one, we know that it's lifelong work. It's not finish it up and, you know, move on to the next topic. It has its cycles too. But just that reminder to keep changing the channel to the kindness, to not get stuck in the hole of the judgment as often as long. Number two, common humanity versus isolation. You know? And sometimes that's actually physical. We feel physically isolated, but sometimes we feel internally isolated, even when, you know, perhaps we're in a circumstance where we can be around people again in person. And so again, these pendulations, this movement back and forth of like, how do we come back to the we experience when the walls start closing in to the me experience. Now, that's not just in the face of collective reactivity. That happens all the time. You know, we lose touch with the we, and we get lost in the me. This is the second wisdom perspective. A third wisdom perspective, mindfulness versus over-identification. So again, the power of mindfulness, not just to recognize, but to release the reactive obsession with what's being recognized. So just another way of saying not shooting the second arrow. So how about some practices? I want to acknowledge the influence on the development that I've done with these practices, which, you know, I've infused with a Dharma perspective, but the work of Manuela Minksreit, who is German by birth, but American. And she's a top international trainer in Hakomi mindfulness body-based psychotherapy, which is, you know, one of the big kind of alternative psychotherapy movements that's strong in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I did training in that years ago, and she was my favorite trainer. And then it turns out she's also a Buddhist teacher in another tradition. So then we started teaching body practices together. And I just want to acknowledge her influence on this reflection, this part of the reflection. So practices. Firstly, when we've long been in physical isolation, it's very easy for that physical isolation to induce what we call the immobility response, or a lot of bracing or freeze in the system. We know that bracing is starting to increase when, you know, sometimes we'll notice in the body like chronic tension in the jaw, or holding together the viscera. The kind of armoring of the belly or the armoring of the heart. Sometimes we can literally feel down the outlines of the body a sense of kind of pulling back. I've noticed that a lot in the last year when I'm in stores and there's like something viscerally in the nervous system that's kind of like trying to draw in a little bit for protection. And over time that can turn into some chronic bracing. So it happens, you know, and it's workable. So if we know that the immobility response, you know, and everything that comes out of that chronically might be arising out of long-term collective reactivity, which we're in, here's the key. Very simple. We move and keep moving physically. Literally, that's the key. This has been my mantra in teaching the whole last year. It's just everywhere I go, I say, please, physically, move and keep moving, because it literally shows us that we're alive from the inside, not the idea, I know I'm alive, I know I'm breathing, but that we move. So I've even been known to say to the people I work with individually, which is not like me, I'm like, if you only have time for one kind of activity in the day, physical exercise or meditation, please exercise. Keep things moving and bring all your mindfulness and heart practice to that. Move and keep moving. And if you have time for both, please do both. We can use every tool in the toolkit right now. So, you know, little things like sometimes when people are meditating in difficult times, you know, there'll be some like more intense emotions or more numbness than usual. And that can be a wonderful time to, sometimes I do it in my lap, but I'll just, touch the fingers of my hand. I'll actually press each side of the fingernail on either side. Apparently this helps balance the adrenals, but I wouldn't, you know, base a medical. Anyway, you know what I mean? Medically, I'm sure it takes a long time to balance your adrenals this way, if at all, but that was the way I was taught. Just press each side of the fingernail and you're just doing it. And then I bring in the way that they teach people to meditate in Thailand, Budo. So I press on each side of the fingernail, and I'm going to the left hand and the thumb. Buddha, awake. Buddha, awake. And then we go backwards. Budo awake. And it just makes it so there's enough movement that we don't just go into some sort of vague meditation, which is not the point. Another wonderful invitation into feeling movement to support aliveness is the water element. So when the Buddha was asked, what is a human body? He said, that which we call the human body is made of the four great elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And so this water element, being on the lookout for water element internally, externally, and both, right? So now I'm referencing the refrain in the Satipatthana Sutta, is a wonderful way to work with the effects of collective long-term reactivity. And so, you know, sometimes it's just the way we move across a room and we bring more mindfulness to just sort of more of a fluid moving across the room rather than step, 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 step. Now, for some people, it's drinking more water, hydrating more. If you live somewhere or walk somewhere where there's moving water, pause, take it in, feel how it's not different, you know, than yours, you know, that which lives in this body. The water element. Accessing aliveness is key in terms of reducing reactivity. So instead of talking about it, let's just take a moment and see what's available. It's like, okay, if we go inside, what direct experience tells you that you're alive right now? And really feeling into and treasuring that aliveness. Might be energies of uplift or, you know, just the aliveness of breath, or it could be even something like the energies of pitti and sukha, you know, happiness of the body and mind, very alive. And breathing in with the aliveness for a moment. It's not cheating. And the last one I'll share right now is a practice around feeling tone. Feeling tones being pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And it's specifically being on the lookout for pleasant feeling tone experiences. And then when we recognize one, lingering. So at some of the sense doors, you know, it might just be much more colored by reactivity. But check out, you know, sounds, sights if your eyes are open, body sensations, thoughts, and clue in to that which is pleasant, and then drop down a level and linger a little bit in the pleasantness. And the thing is, reactivity is agitating. So even if the reactivity is, you know, around wanting and it feels compelling, there's a certain amount of stress. So it's just like, oh yeah, just simplifying, feeling the pleasantness. So the good news is that actually events of collective reactivity can lead to collective awakening. That's the good news. And we've seen that too this last year. And we understand that awakening happens in cycles. It's not one great awakening and we live happily ever after. I wish. But there's a waking up, and then there's, you know, more work to be done. and then waking up and more work to be done. And sometimes it really takes the level of dukkha, of difficulty on the collective that we're in for some massive waking ups. You know? May that continue to be so. We need it. A closing quote from the great late Rumi. Try not to resist the change which comes your way. Instead, let life live through you. And do not worry that your life is turning upside down. How do you know that the world you are used to is better than the one to come? I think about how long ago he wrote that. How long ago the Buddha taught the fire sermon. It's always been burning. It's always been waking up. You know, how do we want to participate? That's the question. So, you know, just a tremendous amount of care for each of you. As always, a tremendous amount of respect for your individual practice and your community practice together.